Hello, this is Alex Brown. Welcome to our continuous service series on cloud strategies for higher education. With me today, we have members from our IT consulting and cybersecurity team, Sri Chalasani, Donna Fredolino, and Kyle Maceda. Building upon our previous podcast covering cloud strategy, service providers, and implementation, we now want to share with you tips on structuring your service level agreement with cloud providers, including what metrics you will need to track and best practice for our ongoing management with your provider. Just one of these tips might save you a lot of grief. I mean, this topic is really where the rubber meets the road. And to break it down for us, Donna, if you kind of give us just an idea of the development of the terms, and what do you need to know in terms of setting up the terms and conditions?
Well, this area, Alex, is one where, in the desire to get an agreement in place, many institutions almost proceed too quickly. And they need to pause, they need to think about what the agreement is that they're seeking with a service provider. They often, in their haste, just ask a provider to give them the copy of the standard agreement or the standard terms that they use for the services that the institution is acquiring. And you know, I have to say, that would be like only looking at one side of the coin. What we want to encourage institutions to do is to become more broadly educated about what they need to have in a service level agreement. We're going to give you some suggestions for what to include in there. Maybe draw upon resources and expertise from outside the institution, in addition to, for example, counsel who might review one shared service agreement a year, to try and get some insights of what's emerging from other institutions, from, well, firms like Plante Moran, for example. We do a lot of agreement discussion and agreement review. And that of other institutions. Again, I go back to the EDUCAUSE site as being a really good resource of sharing about agreements that other institutions have established with cloud service providers. But fundamentally, I think it comes down to once you have your plan in place, what is it that you want to include in a service level agreement? And Sri, you've had a lot of success in talking with clients about that. I know you have some things that you really want to make sure are present in an agreement.
Sure. So I think one of the benefits of being in a cloud environment is you have the ability to look at each service independently. What I mean by that is you can look at an application, a process, or a physical infrastructure type system. And you can treat them with different variants of what you want in that service level agreement. For example, when you look at applications, we should not treat all applications equal. We should treat them depending upon how critical those applications are. For example, a payroll or an ERP system, which has a broader impact on our user base, should have a higher level of criticality compared to maybe a simple storage type environment where we're exchanging files, such as a Google Drive or a Dropbox type environment.
So you're saying like the metrics or the expectations for those would actually be different.
They should be different. Mm-hmm. For example, your ERP system, if you say that a 1 hour downtime is not acceptable, then your service level agreement should specifically say if the system is more down for more than 1 hour, what is the vendor going to do to bring you maybe reroute your traffic to a different data center to bring your systems back up and running again. So you almost have to look at an application by application basis or the service that they're providing and treat it from your viewpoint as to how critical is it for your organization to have it back up and running.
And you often want to align those SLAs with the ones you may have internally, right? Mm-hmm. Making sure they're consistent. So if you have expectations from your institution that systems are available a certain percentage of time or need to be back online, you'd want to make sure that what you're negotiating with your provider aligns with that so that you're in sync and there's not a big gap between the two organizations or the two infrastructures.
Well, most students don't really want to accept any reduction in the total number of hours of IT technical support, right? I mean, they want, in fact, a 24/7 environment.
Yeah,
so this is one which is, I think, a great example of where we're trying to get improvement by working with a provider.
Yeah, and Donna, to your previous point about general counsel, I mean, typically clients will provide us feedback that the general counsel, they can review perhaps the terms and conditions, but technical SLAs about performance, availability of IT systems, that's not really their language, and there can be sometimes a gap there.
Right. I think one other thing, too, to add to that is the aspect of even regulatory requirements. So if we're talking sensitive information, what are those critical regulatory things we need to consider in the SLA? So if it's sensitive, health information that, the medical school has, so we do a partnership, that's taken into account for those areas that we need to kind of protect. Same thing with if it's a storage of credit cards, which would fall under the PCI requirements, that we've kind of identified what needs to happen from the vendor side. And so kind of stepping back, so a lot of this, the SLA itself, the agreements we established kind of really formulates, if you will, the arrangements under vendor management. I mean, we're talking the relationship under how we maintain our relationships with our vendor. And I know, Donna, in our client experience, we see a lot of IT and relationships under the vendor management umbrella being a key driver to getting what we need out of our vendors in that relationship establishment.
I think the key point to think through is as we go with cloud providers, we are making a fundamental shift in the responsibility to effectively evaluate how those services are being provided. We used to do that internally with our own staff, and now we have to have the knowledge, the expertise, and an assigned person who is capable of doing that for an external provider. Typically, a provider will assign some form of liaison or a project manager, a product manager, and have metrics that they are evaluating and providing on a monthly or quarterly basis. But what's really important is we need to make sure as an institution that we've got someone who's capable of reading and understanding those metrics taking an appropriate action if they're not headed in the right direction. So it's a shift. It's a really important fundamental shift.
It is a shift. It's a shift. I mean, because traditionally IT was more of an operational role, and now that role's evolving into one that includes aspects of governance and strategy and vendor management and delivering business value back to the institution, right? So the traditional making sure the lights are blinking, that's something we're now using a provider for. And so it frees up their time and their resources to deliver back to the institution.
Absolutely right. It makes me constantly come back to, what are kind of the best practice metrics that I should be thinking about or including, and I'll throw one out, and that's because of an agreement that I saw recently where a provider wanted to retain the right to aggregate information from a variety of institutions to do analysis, and it was a little bit embedded in the agreement. Now the institution saw that they didn't want to have their data used in that way. I think it really makes a good sharp line point about what's in your agreement, what is the vendor allowed to do. I'd say best practice within certainly student and other personally identifiable information, even if it's used in the aggregate, it would be likely a preference not to do that.
Yeah, and absolutely. So and even we've talked about, a relationship, but even when the relationship doesn't work out, and we have to look at the exit strategy. I know, Kyle, we've talked and we see clients a lot of times where it's not the right relationships, and so maybe you can kind of get a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, obviously you want to perform your diligence and do your work up front and negotiate your terms and your SLAs, but the reality is if things don't go well or there are chronic issues and the contract needs to be terminated, what are those termination costs? What's your exit strategy? What do you own? What don't you own, right? So at the end of the day, you potentially could be walking away from agreement with, no hardware or software licensing of your own. If you're lucky, you'll have your data, but if your data is encrypted, there may be challenges around making sure you have the encryption keys and things to, extract that data. And what are the provisions and costs for moving from provider A to provider B or bringing things back in-house? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of considerations there and really making sure that you have that dialogue up front when you're talking about governance and security, when you're talking about what architecture, what model do you use. These are additional conversations. It's often better to do it up front prior to when you actually need to exit and trying to then negotiate because you're locked into a contract.
Well, one other thing not directly related to the exit strategy is also the data breach protocols. Obviously, we never want to see anybody's data breached, but if it does happen, where does accountability lie? What is the responsibility of the provider to how quickly should they notify you so you can turn around and notify your constituents? And how quickly do they react to a breach? Also, it's worthwhile trying to find out when was the last known data breach within their organization, how did they mitigate it. And finally, from your perspective, what kind of technology, especially if you're onboarding a cloud service provider, what kind of impact does it have on your cyber liability coverage?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that, all these things kind of, it sounds like it comes back to establishing, knowing, what needs to be in our agreement from what our pain points are. Do we need to be back up in 1 day or 1 second? Knowing what our rights are, what we can ask, and what's kind of relationship we have and who to contact. And also maybe the shared responsibility we talked about earlier about, do we have the right technical resources in-house to understand what material reports are provided to us. So with that, I'll wrap this up. This kind of covers our third topic in this series. And as we step into our next series topic, which is covering cybersecurity, in that session, we'll highlight special security issues, considerations that you'll want to be aware of as you define your cloud strategy. We know that as you continue listening on, you're probably listening to this podcast on the go and may want more details or checklists when you get to your desk. So please feel free to go out to our website, and we have information there available for you for reference. With that, I'd like to thank our panelists here, and we will look forward to seeing you on the next podcast. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us today. And for more information on higher education, please visit highered.plantmoran.com. Thank you.